Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. 30% of higher education students are the first in their families to attend college. And on today's show, we are speaking with first-generation college students. These young people have overcome many obstacles, including poverty, family substance abuse, and homelessness. They were accepted into the Students Rising Above program. It's a Bay Area program that provides students with support and mentors. SRA invests in low-income first-generation college students who have demonstrated a deep commitment to education while overcoming tremendous odds. 100% of their students are accepted into four-year colleges. 90% graduate from college. This is three times greater than the national average for low-income first-generation students. And today we are joined by three students. And a former student, I should say. Gabby Gonzalez Anaviska just completed her first year at Brandeis University. She's originally from Guatemala. She moved to the United States as a teenager and taught herself English in a very short period of time. She moved up to AP English by her senior year of high school. She is a Myra Kraft Scholar at Brandeis, where she participates in the Academic Senate. And Gabby joins us on the line from San Rafael. Hi, Gabby. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. How you doing?
I'm good. Great to have you. And we're also joined by David Padilla. He just finished his first year at UC Berkeley. He's pursuing a degree in political economy. David's family was homeless for a long period of time. They lived in a van in Richmond until they were able to get back on their feet into a home again. David is actively involved with Hermanos Unidos and the Latino Student Business Association at the UC Berkeley campus. And David joins me in studio. Hi, David. Thank you for coming in.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
We're also joined by Ali Rucker. Ali grew up in a family that struggled with poverty, substance abuse, and mental health in Marin County. She became independent at the age of 16 and went on to Wellesley on a full-ride scholarship in 2007. She graduated in 2011 and explored the legal and social justice fields. She just returned from Peace Corps in Tanzania, where she was a high school English teacher and a community health educator, and she plans to go back to Tanzania for another 5 to 6 weeks. And Ali also joins me in studio. Hi, Ali. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much, Rose.
Well, it's great to have all of you. And I'd love for you to talk first about how you found out about Students Rising Above, because it's a really incredible organization. And I should say, Students Rising Above was on our show last year and talked about how they really needed mentors. So I decided to mentor and worked with Gabby last year. So I'm really excited she's on the show today. Just to give you a couple stats, 100% are low to moderate income, 92% of the students are first generation, 47% are in foster care, 21% have experienced homelessness. Now, we hear these stats fairly regularly, but we don't often see the faces in the media. And so why don't we talk about your stories? Ali, you graduated from Wellesley in 2011. When did you first learn about Students Rising Above?
There was a flute player in the concert band that I was in high school who was a member of Students Rising Above 2 years ahead of me. And she was a mentor to me in general. I was also a flute player. I looked up to her a lot. And the closer we became throughout high school, the more she learned about my family history. And she really encouraged me to apply during my junior year. And I was really honored to be accepted. But it was all due to her, you know, influence and suggestion that I join.
And when you were in high school, talk about the opportunities you had or didn't have, you know, when it comes to applying to school and learning how this process works. I mean, the more I read about what it's like today, it's so hard to get into schools these days.
Sure. So when I was in high school, I had already sort of joined the AP honors scene of kids studying. But I remember a distinct day in fifth grade, like acknowledging to myself that education was going to be the way out of my family's cycle of poverty. I didn't know that that would culminate in college necessarily. I just knew that I needed to apply myself as much as possible in school. So I think in high school, you know, it was a really chaotic time. There was my brother got shot. My sister was in a near-death car accident, both within like 3 months of each other. My dad was doing some pretty heavy drugs at the time. My mom was really overwhelmed with all of it. Everyone was just sort of doing the best they could. And I was the last kid, you know, trying to stay afloat and stay out of trouble. And so sometimes I look back and try to think about, like, how did I get my homework done and where was I? And what was I don't really know how I managed the grades I got. But I just kind of stuck to the path of keeping my head above water and doing well in school. And before I knew it, you know, SRA was in the picture and they were connecting me with all the resources I needed to find, you know, full ride scholarships and apply to millions of scholarships in case some of them didn't come through, and to apply to as many schools as I could. And yeah, so that was a huge, huge connecting piece. I don't know what I would have done without that.
How did you come to that realization about education in the fifth grade?
Well, I think my brother and sister were older than me, and they were in middle school at the time. And when you come from a broken family, even when people really care about each other and they're doing the best they can, as the last kid, I guess I had a chance to sort of sit back and look at what everyone was doing, and things weren't going well. My brother and sister were in rehab when I was in middle school, and like my dad had been an alcoholic for a long time, and he struggles with a lot of different pain. He's paralyzed, things like that. And I think I just... Well, actually, I remember there was a test called Gifted and Talented Education to get into, like, the accelerated education stream in sixth grade. And I hadn't been asked to test for it in third grade because I was too hyper and couldn't pay attention. I didn't have good study skills. But in fifth grade, I really wanted to take the test. And all of my close friends, especially in Marin County, it's a pretty wealthy area, I had kind of decided, like, wow, all my friends are doing this, and I want to be asked to do it. So I kind of buckled down and was like, I guess it's school. I guess that's the way I'm going to figure this out. And yeah, I mean, my parents hadn't gone to college, and so I kind of knew that that would be a difference, yeah.
And that is Allie Rucker. She recently returned from Tanzania, where she was a high school English teacher and community health educator. She graduated from Wellesley in 2011 on a full ride, and she's going back to Tanzania, and we'll talk about that later in the show. And what about you, David? You grew up in Richmond, California, and your family's still there. Your family was homeless for a long period of time.
Yeah, so especially early on, you know, a large part of this was affected by my father's alcoholism. And then so because of, you know, his issues kind of with the law as well in terms of that alcoholism, that caused us to go to eventually live in a van for a while. And, you know, I was in elementary at the time, and especially as a child, it definitely affects the way you think about just growing up and also education as well. And then personally, education became the thing that I strive for. And to me, it was the, okay, this is what's going to get me out of this role in poverty. And so going from elementary to middle school to high school, education was always the goal. That's what I believed would help us, you know, get out of poverty. And especially in high school, hearing about SRA, Students Rising Above, a former student from Students Rising Above actually came to my high school and talked about the program. And at that point still, I was very unsure. And I think hearing his words and hearing how the program helped him, it really motivated me to apply. And then especially connecting with Students Rising Above and having all those connections, because I knew I wanted to go to college. It was exactly how I would that I was completely unsure on.
And I understand that at one point your family left Richmond because they didn't want you to grow up in a violent area.
So during 2006-2007, Richmond had a very large spike in violence, especially gang violence. And so we moved to Idaho Falls, Idaho, which is a eastern city in Idaho. And so going from a community that is largely Latino and going to a community that was about 89% white, you know, is very different. And adjusting, it really taught me a lot because, you know, those are still the years, about sixth grade. So still the years where, you know, I'm developing and learning how to interact with others. And, you know, eventually moving back as well, it definitely taught me a lot in terms of how to, you know, interact with people. And then once I was back in Richmond, you know, again, that violent community came back.
What happened?
So I was actually my first day of high school, freshman year. And it was, you know, we were in our house and a home invasion took place. So it was a few men that came in, rushed in with weapons and, you know, put us, you know, held us at gunpoint, you know, to take things of all sorts. And, you know, it's something you never expect that's going to happen to you. So when it did happen, you know, it had a very large effect for a few years. And, you know, to this day, it's still something that, you know, affects me and, you know, still something you reflect upon. And, you know, I feel like that incident itself really has influenced me in terms of what I want to do, which is going back to my community, helping, you know, people just as myself who have gone through similar things.
And were you able to get help after that? Because we talked before the show about how traumatic it was. I mean, they were there for about 5 minutes and they held your entire family at gunpoint.
Yeah. So at first, it was more of a, oh, you know, I can get through this. I don't need help. But, you know, as time went on, it's something that really taught me the importance of being able to advocate for yourself and ask for help, and something that eventually made me want to apply to Students Rising Above as well. And, yeah, so I eventually got help, you know, just being able to talk to it, to even mentors, to the teachers, it definitely assisted me, because going through it alone, which is something that a lot of young people who are living in these communities do, is definitely hard.
Mm. David Padilla just finished his first year at UC Berkeley. He's pursuing a degree in political economy. He is actively involved in Hermanos Unidos. What is Hermanos Unidos at UC Berkeley?
Oh, so it's an organization on campus that helps Latino men and women as well. And what it does is try to provide a community for Latino students, and that's keeping them active in terms of academically, but also socially as well.
And David joins us in studio. He's also part of the Latino Student Business Association. And Gabby Gonzalez-Anavisca, you just completed your first year at Brandeis University. You are originally from Guatemala, and then you moved to the United States and taught yourself English in a very short amount of time, moved up to AP English by your senior year of high school. So, Gabby, I mean, you have had experiences not only in the U.S., but moving to the United States and not knowing any English at all.
Oh, yeah. It was an interesting journey, I'm not going to lie. When coming here, not knowing English, I had an extremely hard time understanding what people were saying. And not going to lie, too, I was bullied because I didn't know how to speak English or understand it. So my escape was reading books, and actually that was what it taught me how to understand English. I started reading books in English and Spanish, and eventually just reading English.
And when did you learn about Students Rising Above?
Actually, it was in my AVID programming in high school. One of my teacher was like, "You guys must apply to this program. It's amazing." And I was like, okay. I completely didn't fully understand what it was, but I don't know what I will do without it. I honestly don't know. And yeah, and I'm glad my teacher from AVID pushed me to apply, and she was like, "You guys better finish the application." And I was, yeah, sure, why not?
And Gabby, when we spent time together last year, before you were leaving, you often talked about the fact that your family really did not want you to leave. Can you talk about that?
Oh, of course. My family is always very close, and they don't like, they always think the family should be always together. And they think, because I was really sick during my senior year, it was really, they were worried that what will happen if I get sick back in Boston. Well, how would they help me, and how would family be together? And it was both, I'm not going to lie, I have seen backlash from deciding to move away from my family, deciding to not cut my family, but like just the notion of putting space between me and my family. They didn't quite agree with the idea.
And so, Gabby, you left, so you came from Honduras to San Rafael.
Yeah.
And then, I'm sorry, Guatemala. And talk about what your first year was like, because you left California. You're going to Brandeis in Boston, which is a huge change. What was most surprising about the experience so far?
One of the surprising things is this. I always thought that community should be like with your same race, and community should be with this people, type of people. But I realized that it doesn't matter for me. It doesn't matter the color of your skin or how do you hold yourself. It matters how you treat each other. And that was the most surprising thing I could find. I found amazing conversations with different intellectuals, and having the opportunity to even be able to talk about different religions. And I don't know, I the idea of me being able to talk with people about religion and economy and politics, and being hearing the different points of view, and not just not hearing the same thing, but hearing a different perspective on certain political things. That was the most surprising thing for me, being able to find a community outside the norm.
David, what about you? What was most surprising during your first year at UC Berkeley?
I think one of the most surprising things was just the high level of diversity, and, you know, that comes in all shapes and forms. And so, for example, you know, going to a very large school such as Berkeley, you meet people that come from all types of backgrounds in terms of wealth and things like that. But also, you know, I spend my first year living in the dorms on campus, something I was completely, you know, unknown about. And, you know, just the fact that I could say, you know, I lived across from, like, the badminton national champion, you know, and in my mindset, I'm just thinking, you know, I'm just a kid from San Pablo, Richmond, you know, this is crazy. So I think that high diversity is something I really appreciated as well, because it really does teach you a lot about understanding how others think, how others act, and why they do that. And also, I would say the level of rigor at Berkeley as well, too. You know, I came from a high school that did not offer AP classes, but instead offered community college classes. And even those, you know, they really challenged me academically. And so when I went to Berkeley, I participated in the Summer Bridge program, and participating in this program itself, and I believe it was my first essay, and, you know, it was an essay I did not do as well as I thought I did on, and, you know, I think that itself was kind of a wake-up call saying, you know, this is definitely a new region, and I definitely need to work on my skills.
And what about you, Allie, when you think back to your first year at Wellesley, what really stands out for you?
Feels like an eternity.
Go ahead.
Feels like an eternity ago. It's almost hard to remember, but I've been reflecting on this question a little bit. And I think for me, having already had some experience with independence, what really surprised me the most about college was how difficult it was to do everything all at once. You have to worry about the logistics of your books and, you know, affording your computer and setting up your dorm and getting to the cafeteria before it closes. And you only have four classes instead of the eight or nine you had in high school, but they're so much harder, they're so much faster, and the level of intellectual engagement in the classroom is so much higher. And as a kid coming from, you know, an underprivileged, possibly undereducated background, you're sitting in a classroom knowing that you have the qualification to be there, but you're like, how do I fit into the fabric of this, and how can I compete? And I definitely struggled a little bit with feeling intimidated. Wellesley is an extremely highly regarded school, just like UC Berkeley and Brandeis. You know, most colleges are very intimidating places to be, but that surprised me a lot. I didn't think it would be so hard on a day-to-day basis just to figure out, you know, food, where am I going, where are my books, whereas it was a lot all at once.
Do you feel like you had the support there in order to deal with these issues? Because you had so much support with Students Rising Above, but once you leave California and go to the East Coast, did you find a support network?
Yeah, so one of the things Students Rising Above started doing, I think my year, was connecting students with mentors in the community. And so I was extremely lucky to have two wonderful people who I hope are listening, Susan Kay and Kevin Fox. They actually moved me to Wellesley. They came with me and they helped me set up my dorm. We did a Bed Bath & Beyond run, you know. And without that piece, I don't know what I would have done. They rented a car. Mm-hmm. They got me from the airport. I'd never flown before. I didn't know what I was doing. And I was so thrilled about the opportunity to go study somewhere, but it would have been so overwhelming alone. And I think, and even beyond that mentor relationship, I think Students Rising Above does a great job of, you know, gathering all the kids before they go, kind of preparing them for the transition, telling them what it's going to be like, and trying to also provide the, you know, financial resources and just know-how of what you're going to need. You know, make sure you get your books before class, your things like that. So they kind of try to fill the gap that your family might not have the knowledge and skills to do, even if they do support you in going, mm-hmm. but especially if they don't.
Mm. Today, we are speaking with three first-generation college students. They all were part of, or are part of, the Students Rising Above program. It's an incredible Bay Area program that works with students who overcome so many odds, poverty, homelessness, neglect, Some of them go through the foster care system. And if you have any questions or comments for our guests, if you are a first-generation college student and you'd like to share your story, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Or if you work for an organization that also reaches out, provides mentors and support for first-generation college students, you know, if you don't know any first-generation college students or you aren't one, it is difficult to navigate the application process when both of your parents – I'm a first-generation college student – when both of your parents have not gone to school, there's nobody to ask questions, right? And then when you come home from your first break, they don't know what questions to ask you. So it's pretty difficult, and I'm guessing it's even more difficult today because there's so much competition. So we'd love to hear from you, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Gabby, what's it been like for you at Brandeis in terms of finding a support network?
I think I could call myself lucky. I am part of a Meyercraft Transitional Year program, and they offer similar support as Students Rising Above. And I guess they'll provide me with tutors and things like that too. So it's, I guess I have two support networks, like I love to call it. The thing is that Meyercraft cannot do Students Rising Above is there for me. And the same thing with what Students Rising Above cannot be physically with me and in Massachusetts, then Meyercraft Transitional Year can do things like that. I think that's my support network, and I think friends and people who like me and hang out with me, that's my support network.
What about you, David?
I think I found a very I feel lucky to have a support system through my organization, Hermanos Unidos. Being in that organization, there are a lot of joining it. There are a lot of people who are just like me and have similar backgrounds. So I think having that shared experience is something that's very important. Also, as well, in terms of Students Rising Above, there's also a fair number of students from the program that are at Berkeley. So, you know, having meetups and being able to talk to each other, I think it's helped me tremendously, especially coming from the same background.
Hmm. And then what about coming home for the first time, Ali? What was it like for you coming home? And you're a really different person, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the weirdest thing, I think, first of all, was the insane amount of homesickness. Like, you know, it snowed for the first time in Boston. That was a huge surprise. And you just don't realize how much you miss California produce and, you know, things like that. But, yeah, I mean, you've had this kind of, like, life-altering experience of really diverse minds and life experiences. And me, culture shock in Boston was a big piece. People are really different there. California's really relaxed and laid back. But at the time, I was sort of on the rocks with my family a little bit, too. So coming back wasn't this, like, you know, happy-go-lucky reunion. It was just a break from the insane stress of school and kind of struggling to get my footing a little bit in California and find a place to be. So there's also that with displaced low-income first-generation college students where sometimes it's not all, you know, puppies and roses during the break. Sometimes you're dealing with your family stress.
Right. I mean, I've read stories about how some students are going away for the summer on a 3-month vacation with their families, and other students are going back home to major, major stress.
Right.
Well, I'd love to talk with you about that after the break, and also what it's like to go from being in that stressful situation and then sometimes supporting your family to really thinking about yourself and doing what you need to do to ensure that you have the education to get out of poverty. Today, we're speaking with three first-generation college students who are all part of the Students Rising Above organization. This group invests in low-income, first-generation college students who have demonstrated a deep commitment to education. And we're speaking with Ali Rucker, David Padilla, and Gabby Gonzalez-Anavisca. And this is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW, a show that relies on engaged listeners. You can join today's conversation by calling 866-798-TALK. That's toll-free 866-798-8255. Or you can post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org, where you'll also find links related to today's show. Coming up in a half an hour at 11 o'clock, it's BBC's World Have Your Say. Stay tuned.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation with Andres Resendez about his new book, The Other Slavery, The Uncovered Story of Indian Enslavement in America. Between 2.5 and 5 million indigenous people were enslaved from 1492 to 1900. Based on his research, he argues that slavery was more damaging than the diseases that decimated indigenous populations. So why is so little known about this, and what should be done to expose this missing piece of American history? That's tomorrow. Friday, it's our media roundtable. We'll be discussing President Obama's trip to Vietnam to push for the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal and his trip to Hiroshima. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, school is out, and we are speaking with three first-generation college students who are part of Students Rising Above, an incredible Bay Area organization that works with low-income, first-generation college students who have demonstrated a deep commitment to education. 100% of these students are low to moderate income. 61% live below the poverty line. 92% are first-generation college students. 21% have experienced homelessness. 90% of these students graduate from college. And today we are joined by Gabby Gonzalez-Anavisca. She just completed her first year at Brandeis. Originally from Guatemala, she moved to the U.S. as a teenager, taught herself English in a very short period of time. She is now a Maya Craft Scholar at Brandeis, where she participates in the Academic Senate. And she's a political junkie. I know that because I worked with Gabby last year. David Padilla just finished his first year at UC Berkeley pursuing a degree in political economy. David's family was homeless for a long period of time. They lived in a van in Richmond until they were able to get back on their feet. David is actively involved with Hermanos Unidos and the Latino Student Business Association at UC Berkeley. And Allie Rucker grew up in a family that struggled with poverty, substance abuse, and poor mental health in Marin. She became independent at 16 and went to Wellesley on a full ride. She graduated in 2011. She just returned from the Peace Corps in Tanzania. She was a high school English teacher and a community health educator, and she's planning to go back to Tanzania for 5 or 6 weeks. And if you have any questions or comments for Gabby, David, or Allie, we'd love to hear from you. If you have any stories about being a first-generation college student, if you work with an organization that helps students who are first-generation, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. We have an email from Carl who says, "Great show. As a first-generation college student raised by a struggling single mom, I have so much respect and admiration for what your guests are accomplishing. I thought a nice note to add was that my mom, maybe partially inspired by my experience, went back to school and graduated from CCSF as class Victorian at age 65.
That's wonderful.
That's great.
That's actually a really great point. I think families can be really changed by their first-generation students going to school. Like, even when you get pushback, I definitely remember my family being terrified that I was leaving. When I came back, slowly but surely, they've seen the value of what I've done. They've, you know, aspired to similar things. It's kind of an inspiring thing for not just your family, but your community.
And I think as well, you know, going back home, you know, taking classes at, for example, Berkeley, I feel lucky enough to take, I took the wealth and poverty class taught by Robert Reich. And
Wow.
And so going back to, you know, Richmond, San Pablo, and directly seeing how that relates to a real example, you know, I think, and then directly with my family as well, you know, having taken a personal finance class and nutritional science class, it really does, you really see how that impacts directly to your community, but also as well your family.
Yeah. Well, Carl, you made me choke up there for a minute because my mom went to the seventh grade and got her GED when I was in college.
Wow.
So you just brought back so many memories there. Thank you so much for calling in or writing in. Talk a little bit more about how your experiences affected your families.
Sure. Allie. So, I mean, it's an ongoing process, right? I'm 27. I just got back from the Peace Corps. My relationships with my family are very much on the mend. I care so much about them. I know they care so much about me. We've all gone through a lot. We've struggled a lot. And I think one thing that's become really clear for me in my education and learning a lot more about nutrition and the political economy in general and just what it means to be socially empowered, it brings that sort of open-mindedness and courage required to face struggle and to look at what that is and how it affects your life and change it. Mm-hmm. And I think in a lot of ways, you know, none of us are perfect, including first-generation college kids who are doing the best they can. Like, even we have our shortcomings and failures from time to time. And I think it's really helped me and my family and my community to see that I do everything I can, but, you know, I'm also part of them, and they're part of me.
Because that can be difficult. I mean, like you, Gabby, your family did not want you to leave because of this bond. And the same thing happened with part of my family. Why can't you just go to a school nearby? Are you too good for a community college? Why do you have to go to this big college? And so, Gabby, talk about what your experience has been like now that you're back home. How has your experience changed your family?
I think it was, I remember when coming home, for the winter break, there was, the first day was, I won't talk to you as much because I need to know how you change. And I remember they telling me, how you talk has changed, and why are you talking this way, and why are you saying certain things? And one day I sat with my grandmother, where I live, and I was like, I call her mom, and I was like, "Mom, this is what is happening. I took an anthropology class, and I hope to become an anthropology one day. And I was like, the reason I change how I talk is because this class has opened my mind, and I want to talk about politics. I want to talk with you about economy. I want to talk about this with you, but when we talk about this, I want to have an open mind as well as you have an open mind. And I think going to college for me has opened lines of conversation that before wouldn't happen. And I realized that support from them is different than I ever thought. I always thought that when going to college, I was going to be alone. And they actually learn how to do certain things because I'm going to college. They learn how to, I remember my mom calling me in about the transportation. She Googled how to get to somewhere from here, from Boston. So I guess they are opening reasons to learn things. That's what I will best say it.
Well, if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. Today we're speaking with first-generation college students who are home for the summer, or in Allie's case, she graduated in 2011 from Wellesley, and she's about to go back to Tanzania. She spent some time there with the Peace Corps. She was a high school English teacher and a community health educator. Gabby Gonzalez-Anaviska just completed her first year at Brandeis. She's from Guatemala. She moved to San Rafael as a teenager, taught herself English, and now she is a Myra Kraft Scholar at Brandeis. She participates in the Academic Senate. And David Padilla just finished his first year at UC Berkeley. He's pursuing a degree in political economy. He's involved with the group Hermanos Unidos and the Latino Student Business Association at UC Berkeley. I mean, what this brings up, and, you know, college is getting a lot of attention for obvious reasons. Massive debt, a debt, and then Bernie Sanders calling for free higher education, right? So we're having a debate about the costs. But we don't hear much about the stigma about what you all face when you go to college. So what would you add to that conversation that we're hearing in the national media, but what we're not really hearing on today's show? David, what would you add to it? Because you actually went to a Bernie rally in Vallejo.
Yes, I went to the Bernie rally.
And you wanted to hear what he was saying about education.
Yes, and specifically education. I know, you know, at Berkeley itself, it's a very political school at times. And, you know, Bernie Sanders has a very big following in Berkeley as well. And so, you know, especially at Berkeley and in terms of stigma, I know especially for a lot of so, for example, in Hermanos Unidos, something that we've talked about is that how for some of us, there is stigma for students that are undocumented, and there is there is stigma for students who are believed, for example, to assumed, oh, they're on a free ride. You know, they might not be taking it seriously, but really, it's not the case. I know. For a lot of students such as myself who are receiving, you know, financial aid, that's itself is the only reason why we are here, along with the support of programs such as Students Rising Above, and it's with that support that's getting us through college. And so, you know, that stigma is something that's definitely tackled on a daily basis.
One of the arguments of free higher education, this is the argument that Bernie Sanders makes, is, okay, Ali, you realized in fifth grade that education was your way out. What if in first grade, fifth grade, you knew that college would be paid for as long as you worked hard enough to get into it, right? Because right now it is so unattainable for so many people.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it would completely change people's aspirations. Right. They would view the entire institution differently. I mean, I think some of the stigmas involved with just getting there definitely have to do with what SRA is trying to address, which is that, you know, low-income, underprivileged families, you know, children of foster care, families with substance abuse, like all of those things, in my opinion, are very wrapped up with bad mental health, which affects your aspiration and your ability to strive for better. You know, that's why SRA is so amazing, because it's taken this very needy group, I guess needy is a weird word, but and connected them with everything they need to get there. But that doesn't exist in so many urban and rural areas, and so kids are just falling between the cracks. And then when you get to college, one thing that's true, especially with the cost of it right now, which in my opinion is so ridiculously inflated, like at Wellesley, I love Wellesley College so much, it's an amazing school, but there were some really superfluous things there. We had a petting zoo twice a year just for stress relief, and it was like, how many thousands of dollars is that petting zoo costing for us to like have stress relief? You know, it just is ridiculous.
What is the tuition at Wellesley right now?
It's, I mean, somewhere between $50,000 and $55,000 for like room and board included.
Wow.
So, and that's true of most liberal arts and private universities. So for that cost of education, I mean, obviously there are, you know, millions of students who can't afford that if they're not getting financial aid. But like we were hearing from David, the fact that there's any stigma associated with receiving a full ride or some financial assistance is ridiculous, because college is so expensive. Mm. People should receive assistance. It shouldn't cost you, you know, the rest of your life's financial investments because you can't afford anything else. So I find that really frustrating. I find that college environments aren't always super socially inviting or, you know, equal. There's definitely a level playing field in terms of that intellectual exchange, but sometimes they're just like really classist and racist assumptions about people's backgrounds. Because I'm a white girl from Marin, a lot of people think that I'm, you know, come from a multimillionaire family, and it's the polar opposite. My family's been there for generations and we don't have very much, so it's important not to assume.
Gabby, what would you add to that when we're talking about stigma around higher education?
One of the things I think all of them, both my friends here said it. I don't have much to add because they plainly said it how it actually is. Being just going to study is really, I don't know what to say. They said it. I don't want to repeat it.
All right. Well, we have a caller in Berkeley. Let's hear from Rachel. Hi, Rachel. Welcome to the show.
Hi, this is Rachel Mercy Simpson, and I'm chair of the media department at Berkeley City College, and we're part of the Peralta District of Community Colleges. And we are so interested in encouraging first-generation students to not only complete their AA at the community college level, but also to continue and transfer on to four-year universities. Any tips? And thank you for this great show, and I'm really grateful to all the students who are speaking up. Advice in terms of how we as faculty can support students, organizations that can support students at our schools, because so many of them don't even have a vision of how they could manage it, you know, and often for economic reasons.
Of course.
And community.
Right.
You know, yeah.
And in some cases, parents say, sorry, there's no possible way this is going to happen. So, David, what advice would you give Rachel?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So so I went to Middle College High School, which was a dual enrollment program in San Pablo. And what that allowed me to do was, while graduating high school, I also completed my associate's degree at Contra Costa College, which is also nearby. I think one of the biggest things that can be done is advocating to local high schools about how they can get started early, especially at community colleges. Not a lot of students know that they can actually take these classes during the summer. And also just being able to expand a kind of a pipeline program, if you will, that will allow students to be aware of the possibility through community colleges, because a lot of people aren't aware of that as a possibility.
What would you add, Ellie?
Yeah, one other thing that I've recently been made aware of upon returning from Peace Corps Tanzania is that Students Rising Above is also launching an online platform called The Hub, and that is designed as, this is my layman's understanding of it, so you can go to the website and figure out a little bit more, but that it's hoping to reach students outside of the San Francisco Bay Area who are trying to secure college resources and stuff. So, I mean, that's only a kind of related to community colleges, but it's an online platform that's helping thousands of students to streamline their process to apply to college, stay in college, get the resources they need. So check that out. And then scholarship hunting. I think community college is affordable, but any way that it can be subsidized always makes things easier for people. I think, and then transitioning into bachelor's programs at four-year colleges, there are tons of scholarships available. It's just a question of applying to as many as you can. And I think students get jaded on that really quickly and feel like they're not going to have access to money, but it's there.
Right. And the books are so expensive, right? David, what else would you add?
And just expanding on Ali's point about the hub. So one thing that they added as well is the community college tabs that you can that gives information on community colleges as well as four-year colleges. So, you know, I was part of the student group that became a part when the hub was created. And so when it was created, it allowed students, not just students who are in Students Rising Above, but for students that are not in the program as well, to be able to gain access to the hub, which has a lot of information on getting started, especially with community colleges.
And I think the hub actually has live mentorship available, which is one of the most valuable aspects of it. It's not just a compendium of resources. It's actual people answering actual students' questions particular to their educational scenario.
Gabby, do you have anything to add?
They are the experts on this.
Well, and also, Students Rising Above, the last time we did a show, there are far more students who are applying than they have room for.
Mm-hmm.
So there are so many students out there who are looking for these resources, for support, for mentorship, everything you talked about. And there aren't enough organizations for all of these students.
Yeah, and maybe just to speak to Rachel's point one last time, I think generally speaking, I don't know what this would look like practically, but I think that colleges, community colleges, four-year universities can do a better job of maybe even just creating student groups of underprivileged students so that there's a sense of community around that where people can share their experiences, share their best practices, just have a sense of community. You know, Hermanos Unidos sounds like an amazing organization. I didn't really find that at Wellesley. I was part of an a cappella group. I made my own group of friends. But a lot of times I felt super ostracized from what I perceived to be a very wealthy educational experience occurring around me. So I think colleges in general can try to create some awareness around that.
I think that's a great, great point. Can you talk a little bit more? You talked about some of the classism, the racism. Talk more about some of the classism that you experienced at Wellesley.
Sure.
I mean, again, this is a school that's $50,000 to $60,000 for room and board every year.
Yeah, and it's a women's college that started in 1875 from, you know, probably a lot of wealthy, kingdoms were sending their princesses and things like that. So it's got a very interesting history. It's as most colleges are these days, it's trying to diversify. And it's doing the best it can, but I think you know, if you sort of look at some of the social crises we're experiencing in America, college reflects that. A lot of the issues that people feel aren't being given enough voice are reflected in student bodies. Sometimes people have quiet, internalized racism and classism they don't even realize they're expressing. Sometimes you're in a class and you're talking about the history of the 1960s and people have wild interpretations of what happened during, you know, civil rights or some other, you know, really important historical period. For me, it was kind of a silent narrative around my personal worth, you know. I did find certain classes, like I took a class in the Africana Studies department called Environmental Racism, and I also went to Jamaica on a one-month program looking at the social and political economy of Jamaica and the history of that, of slavery on that island. And those experiences really helped me to just understand what was going on in the world with those kinds of issues. And I didn't have that perspective coming from Marin before. I'd always kind of experienced some code switching and, you know, changing the way I speak with my family and my friends and educational settings, things like that. But Wellesley was the first time where I was kind of able to put my finger on it and say, like, wow, this is true marked difference between communities. And I don't know, that's definitely what drove me to Peace Corps. I'm very interested in culture and, you know, helping people and those kinds of things.
Were you able to bring up these issues in class?
The more that I veered toward, you know, like anthropological lenses and like the Africana Studies department, yes. But in some of my more mainstream classes, no. You can be voicing the dissenting opinion that some people really don't want to hear or don't relate to at all. So,
what about you, David? Have you had any of those experiences?
You know, going into Summer Bridge, the first class I took at Berkeley was a education class. And in it, it was a seminar-type style class that was very small, about 13 people. And in it, we discussed a lot of issues, including, you know, racism, intersectional, feminism, you know. And I think it was this that showed me that being able to talk about these issues is definitely possible, especially, you know, at Berkeley. But I can feel, you know, Ali, especially in the large classes, it is sometimes difficult because you don't, you know, you don't want to say something and someone becomes, you know, hurt by that. So, but I think being a liberal place, Berkeley definitely allows for a lot of opinions to be shared.
Right. And what about you, Gabby?
I guess because I'm from Marin too, I never really heard the term microaggressions. And I personally didn't face any racism or things like that or classism, but I heard a lot of people. They heard that there were many microaggressions, but I guess Brandon is very vocal in his political views, so I don't know. That's what I wanted to share.
Microaggressions.
Microaggressions are basically anything that you believe are not going to be harmful or insulting, basically, but they are. They're little things we do physically and when we're talking.
Well, we have an email from Erica that says, thank you for having this show. Congratulations to the scholars. I am an adult first-generation college student who graduated from Laney in 2014, transferred, and I'm now working several jobs to finish my nuclear medicine degree this year. It's often a challenge to find resources for students like me because of what feels like ageism in the system. Promising scholars can be of any age. Any thoughts or suggestions for resources for adult first-generation students?
Actually, yeah.
Ellie.
At Wellesley, sorry to jump in there.
No, please.
There is a program called the Davis Scholars at Wellesley, which is, I think, partially because Wellesley is a women's college. They're sort of interested in helping maybe a more specific group of students in a way. So they started this Davis Scholars program 20, 30 years ago, and it's designed to help women who have left their educations re-enter at any age. And that was a super cool program to have parallel to the traditional four-year just straight out of high school program, and it was great to see. But I think that other schools are kind of, at least maybe in the liberal arts scene, are sort of starting to come up with programs like that. So maybe there's more of that.
And Erica, if you send a message to Students Rising Above, I'm sure they have a resource for you. Thank you for writing, and Eric. David, Erica wanted to say shout out to you because she's also a Padilla.
Oh, okay, great.
Thank you for emailing Erica. David, UC Berkeley has one of the highest housing costs of any college in the state. It's about maybe $1,000 less than one of the most expensive colleges in the country. So were you able to get financial help also from Students Rising Above?
Yeah, so Students Rising Above has been helping me in terms of finding housing. So I'm still currently in the process of looking for housing. I'm looking for an apartment. But being able to talk with my advisor, you know, Lorna Contreras, and being able to help me tremendously.
Yeah, but I often wonder for young people in the Bay Area, how do they find housing when they're going to college? It's so expensive.
Oh, yeah, so Berkeley especially. So, I mean, the cost that, you know, my family back home is paying for to rent is the cost for about, you know, almost a one-bedroom in Berkeley by the campus. So
wow.
It's very difficult and also very competitive as well.
Right. We've got about a minute and a half left. David, what are you looking forward to or what's next for you?
Looking towards what's next, I might say, you know, learning from Berkeley, I can already see that, you know, what I learn is what I'm going to take to my community. So looking forward, just being able to advocate for my community, you know, luckily I'll be able to complete an internship this summer that'll let me work in terms of health policy in the local city of Richmond. So, and also being able to help local students, just as Students Rising Above is it.
David Padilla just finished his first year at UC Berkeley, where he's pursuing a degree in political economy, and he's part of the group Hermanos Unidos. What about you, Gabby? What are you looking forward to?
I'm actually elected. During May, I was elected student union secretary, so I'm looking forward at this new role, being able to advocate for my peers and put forward any ideas on how to help my people and everyone else in the school. And I'm looking forward just getting a degree to be able to help my family.
All right. Well, Gabby Gonzalez Anavisca just completed her first year at Brandeis. Originally from Guatemala, she moved to San Rafael and taught herself English in a very short period of time. And she's home for the summer. Just quickly, Allie, what about you?
Looking forward to going back to Tanzania for 5 to 6 weeks, and then I'm coming back to the Bay Area and figuring out next steps, a job. If someone's got one, email the station, let me know. Figure it out.
Allie Rucker graduated from Wellesley in 2011, and as you heard, she's heading back to Tanzania soon. Allie, David, and Gabby, thank you all so much for coming in.
Thank you so much,
thank
Rose.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. On the next Your Call, Andres Resendez joins us to discuss his new book, The Other Slavery, The Uncovered Story of Indian Enslavement in America. Between 2.5 and 5 million indigenous people were enslaved from 1492 to 1900. Resendez argues that slavery was more damaging than the diseases that decimated indigenous populations. Why is so little known about this? What should be done to expose this missing piece of history? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show. Malihe Razazan is senior producer. Matt Martin is executive producer. And Rosalie Atkinson is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.